Okay, so today we're diving into a genre that often gets kind of like pushed aside, erotic novels.
Okay.
But before anyone jumps to conclusions, these stories can actually be really useful for examining power dynamics, especially when it comes to female characters. And the character we're looking at today really flips the script because she starts off powerful, like almost untouchable,
Right.
but then things get complicated.
Yeah.
So tell me about this genre and why this character in particular caught your eye.
So this genre is really popular in Japan, and it often features these like really exaggerated power dynamics.
Okay.
But what's interesting about this specific novel is how it takes a common trope, the onaho, which is essentially a woman who becomes like a sex object for a powerful master, and kind of clips it. Because our main character, Fushin, she doesn't start off submissive.
Right
She's
on.
like as dominant as they come. Like, we're talking warrior princess, descended from a royal line of succubi.
Whoa.
She even holds this incredibly rare title, Succubus Monk Master.
What does that even mean?
It's a bit of a mystery,
Yeah.
but it sounds pretty badass, right?
It does.
And it speaks to her status within this world, like she's feared, she's respected. There's even a line where she boasts about never losing a fight to a man, ever.
Wow.
So she really embodies this classic fantasy of like a strong female character, but that's what makes her eventual downfall so fascinating.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because she's presented as this untouchable force.
Yeah.
So it makes you wonder, how could anyone possibly break her? And that's where the main conflict of the story lies, I think. Because her journey takes a very sharp turn when she's forced to become an anho for
Yeah.
this powerful master.
Yeah.
And the anho trope is common in this genre,
Right.
but it's usually a starting point for the character. It's not something that's like thrust upon them after a lifetime of being super dominant.
Exactly.
And Fushin's reaction to this is initially defiance. Like she just scoffs.
Yeah.
She's like, "This is a mistake. I have never been subservient to anyone, especially not a man."
Right.
So how does this story even begin to break down this, incredibly strong and independent woman? It's not like she just has like a sudden change of heart, right?
It's a process for sure.
Yeah.
And it's one that the novel really lingers on. And it's through this process that we start to see the core fantasy of the genre play out, but in like a much more, I don't know what the word is,
Convoluted.
convoluted, yeah, kind of way.
So they're breaking her down, but it's like a process.
Yeah.
How is that reflected in the actual language of the novel?
Yeah. So you see this gradual shift from defiance to something that resembles, I don't know, like acceptance.
Okay.
Initially, she's like shouting, fighting back, but as it goes on, her resistance kind of wears down, and her language becomes more passive, even like self-deprecating.
So it's like watching her sense of self-worth just crumble as she's forced to deal with this new reality.
Yeah,
And then
exactly.
there's that information overload scene, which really got me. It's like she's being bombarded with all these commands and degrading labels, almost like they're trying to brainwash her into this like complete subservience.
It's really
Can you
intense.
tell me a bit more about that scene? Like, what kind of information are we even talking about?
It's basically just this constant stream of verbal abuse.
Okay.
Like, she's always being told that she's worthless, that her body only exists for the master's pleasure, that kind of thing. It's like they're stripping away her own name, her past accomplishments, and replacing it all with these, I don't know, like degrading terms.
It's like sensory overload, but for her identity.
Right.
By the end of it, you almost get the sense that she's questioning everything she thought she knew about herself.
Definitely.
It's a really disturbing scene.
Yeah.
And it really speaks to the psychological manipulation that's happening throughout this whole novel. Like you start to wonder, is this genuine submission at this point?
Right.
Or is it something more like, what's it called? Stockholm Syndrome,
Yeah.
where she's just clinging to any shred of positivity she can find to cope.
It's really hard to tell, and honestly, I think that's intentional. Like, the author is leaving that question open for the reader,
Okay.
but it definitely makes you think about the nature of consent and free will, especially within this kind of power dynamic.
And I'm assuming that this being an erotic novel and all, it doesn't shy away from the physical aspects of her transformation either.
Oh, absolutely not. This novel gets pretty graphic in its depiction of her physical subjugation.
I see.
And what really struck me is how her internal monologue, her sense of self, it's like it breaks down at the same time as her body.
It's like the two are totally intertwined.
Yeah, exactly. And as the story goes on, those lines get even more blurred.
Which brings us to the ending of this novel, which I guess you could say is presented as a happy ending.
Happy is definitely one way to put it.
Yeah, happy feels kind of loaded in this situation.
A little bit, yeah.
So how does it actually end?
Well, the novel ends with Fushun fully embracing her role as an Onaho. Like, she finds pleasure, even pride, in pleasing her master.
Wow.
There are even these scenes where she degrades herself for his amusement, and she's, like, competing with these other women who are also in these subservient roles.
So it's like she's not just been broken, but she's been completely reprogrammed at this point.
Yeah. Like, her entire identity revolves around pleasing this man now.
And it's not even just him.
What do you mean?
Well, in these later scenes, it's like she's performing for an audience.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like a public display of her submission.
That's a really disturbing thought when you think about everything she's gone through.
Yeah, it's like the ultimate erasure of that powerful warrior she used to be.
Exactly.
And it really makes you confront this unsettling possibility that maybe, in the context of this world, this actually is her happy ending.
It makes you wonder, is that ending actually happy? Or is it more like a messed up reflection of the power dynamics in the story? And maybe even in the society where the story came from. Right. It's like, this novel forces us to think about some really uncomfortable stuff about power, you know, and agency, and the whole way we view female sexuality. It's easy to just brush it off as fantasy, but I think there's something deeper going on.
Totally. Because on the one hand, you have this awesome character who's so strong and independent in the beginning.
Exactly.
And the story just systematically breaks her down. Like, it strips away everything that made her her, and then says that her being submissive is what she actually wants. That's a hard kill to swallow.
It really is. And that's what makes analyzing a story like this so interesting. Because then we have to ask, what does it say about the people who enjoy reading this kind of thing?
Right.
What does it say about the culture that creates these narratives?
Exactly. It's like a conversation people don't want to have. Because then we have to confront some maybe not so pleasant truths about, like, our own desires.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe even our own biases that we don't even realize we have.
Totally.
And the ways that we might actually be contributing to these harmful power dynamics without even realizing it.
It's scary, but it's true.
And I think that's what makes this deep dive so fascinating and a little disturbing, if I'm being honest, because it's not just about, like, the graphic stuff.
Yeah.
It's about the deeper message underneath it all. The stuff that's being said on purpose and accidentally.
Definitely.
We talked a lot about Fushun and her whole deal, but what about the master? Does the story ever give his side of things? Like, what are his motivations?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
And honestly, not really. He's kind of this mysterious figure throughout the whole thing.
Huh. Okay.
Like, it's obvious that he wants control. He wants to possess her. But we never really get inside his head.
So that makes him even more unsettling in a way.
Right.
Because he becomes like this blank slate where we can project all our own baggage about, like, male dominance and female submission.
Exactly. It's like he's not even a fully fleshed out character. He represents this whole system of oppression.
That's a really good point. And because he's so vague, the reader can just kind of fill in the blanks themselves.
Exactly. With their own interpretation, their own experiences with these kinds of power dynamics.
So we're wrapping up this deep dive. And honestly, I have a lot to think about. We started by talking about how erotic novels can be a way to look at power dynamics, and I think this one really took us there.
Yeah.
This was not your typical romance, that's for sure.
Definitely not.
It's more like a warning about what happens when someone has too much power, and how complicated it can be for women to actually have agency. Like, what does real empowerment even look like?
It makes you think.
Can someone be truly happy if they're constantly submitting to someone else? And at the end of the day, whose fantasies are we really fulfilling when we read stuff like this? It's a lot. This is a conversation I'm going to be having with myself for a while, I think. Thanks for coming on the show. This was really eye-opening.
Anytime. And for everyone listening, sometimes the stories that really make us think are the ones that make us a little uncomfortable. The ones that force us to look at our own desires, even the ones we don't like to talk about.